All stations, all call signs. This is Wrecker Actual, over. Stand by for transmission. Prepare to copy. This is American Vindicta.
Hello, and thank you for listening to the American Vindicta Show. Today is episode 192. This will be a continuation of what we started yesterday with the CIA and the remote viewing and all the different things that went into that with the different studies and research and the various operations. If you want to catch that last episode, that would be episode 191. The CIA paranormal program has found a new life in Utah. This is an article wrote by QUER 90.1's Justin Higginbotham. Paul Smith's Psychic School is located in an industrial park on the outskirts of Cedar City. It could be an accountant's office, except for a decal of a pyramid and an all-seeing eye on the door. It's called Remote Viewing Instructional Services. And inside, half a dozen students hailing from Colorado to Canada are practicing before their first session. Remote viewing is a form of extrasensory perception, or ESP, where practitioners learn to describe an object which might be on the other side of the world without using any of their five senses. In Smith's version, a manager gives a viewer an arbitrary number. It represents a target that could be anything from the Eiffel Tower to a terrorist location, but the student does not know what it is. The viewer listens to the number, and then something happens. Even Smith said he doesn't know what exactly. But the students quickly sketch the target, and before them on a paper appears whatever this impression may be. Quote, I teach them how to get that number, and then their subconscious goes out and finds what the target is from that. There's a little hand waving going on here because we don't know exactly how it works, but it does work if you set people up in the right circumstances. Mr. Smith learned the technique as a recruit to a CIA program. Quote, while I was in what has become known as the Stargate program, I was an operational remote viewer, which meant that I actually did apply remote viewing projects to try and gain intelligence information from potential foreign threats, says Smith. Those threats included the Soviet Union, Chinese businesses, and narco traffickers. Smith grew up in a small town in Nevada. He joined the Army as an Arabic linguist and was in intelligence at Fort Meade, Maryland, when he was recruited into Stargate. The program lasted between 78 and 95 and cost as much as $20 million, according to a declassified document and former operators. Although Stargate was abandoned by the military, a cottage industry has now grown around remote viewing. Some two dozen schools offer lessons and services to civilians. Smith's week-long program costs $3,000. He said it's the Cadillac option because of his CIA training. Smith is quoted saying, my own particular approach is the closest to the original that is actually available out there. Applying paranormal science. People have recently been using remote viewing for things like financial investments. There's even an app called Remote Viewing Tournament that crowdsources psychic talent to play the market. On-call viewers are now getting hired for everything from business research to archaeological explorations. Tanya Gunnarsson, a healthcare worker from California, signed up for Smith's class to help families find their loved ones. Miss Gunnarsson said, "I've had some training with maybe discovering why somebody is deceased and the story behind it. When there's an investigation going on, it can be very useful." But for some students, the appeal isn't just the practical applications. Joffrey Perlot traveled to Smith's classroom from Canada. Joffrey says, "It shows me our potential as human beings, beyond our physical self and beyond our physical surroundings. You can help people. You can better yourself. And anything that illustrates and illuminates our human potential is something that really strikes a chord with me." Joseph Baker is a sociologist at East Tennessee State University, where he studies religions, politics, and paranormal subcultures. He said, "Our scientific era can leave a void for some, which explains students' attraction to remote viewing." Mr. Baker said that science is useful, but the idea that it's going to take over things that have previously been the provenance of religion or the paranormal, it can't fully go all the way there. He said that mainstream science can't always explain bizarre experiences, and the more science tries, the more some pushback comes. Mr. Baker is quoted saying, "People may be alienated about the cold, empirical nature of it all, and think, well, that can't explain how I saw my dead relative come to me. After all the paranormal research for explanations and its meaning, it isn't new. Religion doesn't have this stigma at all," says Baker. "It's a cultural distinction between one being normative and one being considered deviant. Paul Smith thinks a major lure for his students is self-actualization, the possibility that humans aren't just meat machines," as he quotes. "He thinks we are capable of much more." The students definitely leave here with a much broader understanding of what human nature is about and what it consists of. The fact that remote viewing is still in use shows that there are people searching for answers, even without the CIA's heavy backing. Here's another article that was wrote by James Clark of Task and Purpose. It's being carried by the businessinsider.com. And it is stated, 5 true stories about the military's bizarre research into paranormal activities. It started with the Nazis, some of whom were obsessed with black magic. In 1945, with the Nazi regime defeated, members of an elite U.S. scientific intelligence initiative called Operation Alsace made their way to Berlin to scoop up as much intel as possible on German military projects and the bombed out remnants of a villa in an affluent neighborhood in southwestern Berlin. They uncovered a cache of documents and artifacts that were part of the Annonerbe, Heinrich Himmler's science organization, which was well funded and very vast. It even had an entire branch devoted to the survey of the so-called occult sciences, says Annie Jacobson, author of the book Phenomena, The Secret History of the United States Government's Investigations into Extrasensory Perception and Psychokinesis. The high-ranking Nazi leader Heinrich Himmler was obsessed with the occult. On Himmler's orders, SS officers raided Germany's occupied territories for artifacts that were related to magic, even ransacking museums in Poland, Ukraine, and the Crimea for mystical text. Nazi scientists at the Annonerbe scoured the globe for items like the Holy Grail and the Lance of Destiny, the spear that was thought to have killed Christ. Quote, "In that organization, there was ESP, psychokinesis, map dowsing, an element of what you could say was the supernatural or the paranormal, Annie Jacobson says. In the villa's basement, the researchers found remnants of Teutonic symbols and rites, as well as a baby's skull in a corner pit of ashes, according to her book, Phenomena. Annie Jacobson goes on to say, we later learned that the Soviets had captured an equal probe of information on this same subject, and when we learned that they were working in this area, you could say that this is the origin story of the psychic arms race. The Cold War arms race spilled over into psychic research. The United States' foray into the psychic research took off in the 1950s when it set about countering Soviet mind control, thought to be a legitimate concern at the time, and it was based, at least partially, off of Nazi research uncovered by the Annenerbe. Both the United States and the Soviet Union relied on the caches of Nazi research that was recovered, some of which detailed experiments conducted at concentration camps, where Nazi scientists pushed human physiology to the extremes and monitored their results, Jacobson writes in Phenomena. Now the CIA and the KGB would conduct similar experiments, each side arguing that the other side's program required countermeasures to defend them against. This fear of the Soviet mind control was reinforced by videos of American prisoners of war reciting communist propaganda, says Annie Jacobson. Quote, we look back and say now, that's ridiculous. You can't brainwash somebody. But it certainly looked that way when you watch those old black and white images of those prisoners of war. Annie Jacobson explains this, adding that the government's exploration into psychic phenomena began as a part of MK Ultra's program. The CIA-backed mind control program, MK Ultra, officially started in 1953, ran well into the 1960s, and involved dosing American citizens with biological and chemical agents like LSD or acid, often without the individual's knowledge. Ms. Jacobson goes on to say, while they were looking into mind research and how to input behavior, the MKUltra subproject 58 became significant, which is the program to use drugs, which they called psychopharmacology, to enhance psychic functioning in psychic people. It's a real jumping-off point for understanding how and why this race against the Soviets began and why it's legitimate in many ways. Both the Soviet Union and the United States government pointed to the other's research into mind control, counter-mind control, and psychic phenomena in general as a justification for their own research. There were stories of Americans putting telepaths on nuclear submarines, of Soviet mind control rays, and a Russian psychic so powerful she could stop the heart of a frog with only her mind. With each new rumor, some based on actual experiments, others little more than disinformation campaigns, the psychic arms race started to gain speed. That time, a secretary with psychic powers found a downed Soviet bomber. The government's research into psychic phenomena often jumped back and forth between the Department of Defense and the CIA, with a program being shut down after inconclusive results, only to open up under a new name. In the 1970s, the remote viewing program was owned by the Defense Department. Remote viewing, which is essentially the idea that someone can visualize details of distant people and/or objects through telekinesis. A small operation was run out of the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio. Its chief employed a secretary, Miss Rosemary Smith, who believed that she had actually psychic powers. Quote, It was a very small budgeted program because most people thought it was bananas. That's what Ms. Jacobson says, that they changed in times of emergency, like in 1976 when the remote viewing team was given a whopper of a mission. Quote, a Soviet bomber had gone down in the jungles of Africa, and the CIA and military intelligence had used every intelligence collection means available to them, from satellite technology to signals intelligence to human intelligence, and they had absolutely nothing. With nothing to lose, the military contacted the remote viewing operation out of Wright-Patterson, and they put the secretary, Miss Rosemary Smith, on the job, and she was able to draw maps that pinpointed where this aircraft was within a few miles, says Annie Jacobson. The cable was then sent to the CIA, and they sent a paramilitary team out to the jungle and near the area where Rosemary Smith said that it would be. They saw a villager carrying a piece of aircraft out of the jungle, and that led them straight to the crash site. It was an earth-shattering event, says Annie Jacobson. Quote, a psychic was able to produce actionable intelligence that no one else could. Then there were the men who stared at goats, among other things. One Army unit, detailed in Annie Jacobson's book Phenomena, known as Detachment G, was established by top-ranking officers who were leery about the idea of bringing on psychics for research. So they stocked the program from within the Army's ranks. One of the unit's taskings was remote viewing, and in September 1979, the National Security Council called on Detachment G to use the remote viewing powers to investigate a Soviet naval base. While concentrating on a photo in a closed envelope, one of the unit's members described seeing a building on a shoreline, which smelled of gas and industrial products. Inside the building was a large coffin-like object, a weapon, with fins, kind of like a shark. A few months later, the CIA received satellite imagery showing that the Soviet Union had constructed a new ballistic missile submarine, later made famous by its NATO designation, the Typhoon class. The hulking nuclear sub was known in the USSR as the Akula, which is Russian for shark. And guess what? We still haven't given up on this research. Presently, the Office of the Naval Research calls this program the Anomalous Mental Cognition, says Annie Jacobson, referring to a $3.9 million program founded by the Office of Naval Research in 2014 to investigate the existence of precognition, which they refer to as the Spidey Sense. Yes, like Spider-Man from the comics. In 2006, Army Staff Sergeant Martin Richburg sensed something odd about a man at a cafe in Iraq. After clearing out the patrons, he discovered an improvised explosive device that the man had left behind. Whether it was instinct or something more, researchers are understandably curious to see if there was a way to trigger that kind of insight. Because of the stigma surrounding ESP and, really, anything having to do with the supernatural, the nomenclature has changed. But Annie Jacobson argues that the research continues and the underlying goal still remains the same. Quote, in essence, you have this idea, which really became the core and the theme of Phenomena, her book, which is it fact or is it fantasy, Annie Jacobson says, or will advanced technology, this remarkable system of systems of technology that the government has developed, which includes computer technology, biotechnology, and nanotechnology, with this rubric of advanced technology, allow us to solve this age-old mystery, whether or not extrasensory perception exists biologically. The next part that we're going to discuss, you're going to hear a lot of repetitive language, things that you've probably already heard before that are in various different accounts. But that's because the scope of the amount of material that I have access to is limited. What I have, though, is multiple different accounts from various different directions of the CIA's interest into remote viewing, parapsychology, psychokinesis, and also just the good old paranormal. The next part is titled Clairvoyant Remote Viewing, the U.S.-sponsored psychic spying. This was wrote by M. Srinivasan, I can't pronounce this guy's name, former associate director of BARC. Abstract. Remote viewing, popularly known as ESP or extrasensory perception, is the ability of human beings to perceive information and imagery of remote geographical targets. Advanced practitioners of the Indian yoga system were well acquainted with Divya Drishta. This paper deals with experiments conducted in the United States of America in which certain individuals were trained to acquire such remote viewing capabilities for collecting military intelligence. During the Cold War years, the USA and Soviet Union are known to have been spying on each other using the services of psychic remote viewers, with the specific objective of gathering intelligence, information of military intelligence. In simple terms, remote viewing is the ability of human participants to acquire information about spatially and temporarily remote geographical targets that are otherwise inaccessible by any known sensory means. There were two complementary components to the U.S. remote viewing program. A, the research program on anomalous cognition, or sometimes called AC, directed initially by physicists Hal Puthoff and Russell Targ at the laboratories of the Stanford Research International, SRI, at Menlo Park, California, which was shifted in 1988 to Science Applications International Corporations, SAIC, under the direction of Edwin May. The findings of their early studies have been reported in prestigious scientific journals during the 1970s. B. Mission-oriented operational assignments overseen by various intelligence agencies of the U.S. government, codenamed Project Stargate. The information regarding this top-secret program was partially declassified by the CIA in July of 1995, following the thaw in the Cold War. Since then, several research articles and many books have been published by some of the persons who were closely associated with this program. These authors have, however, expressed regret that they had not been permitted to reveal much of the sensitive details of the program. The present brief account is based on the published sources of information. Background to remote viewing faculty. The faculty of the remote viewing is popularly also known as extrasensory perception, or ESP for short, a term coined by the pioneering parapsychology researcher J.B. Rhine in 1934. Students of Indian yogic lore, like the yogis, are however well acquainted with this. Aphorism 3.26 of Patanjali's classic work Yoga Sutras from 400 BC describes the first of the Ashta Siddhas or psychic powers that a serious practitioner of yoga can acquire as obtaining knowledge of the small, the hidden, or the distant by directing the light of the superphysical faculty. Russell Targ has commented that the techniques used by the U.S. viewers, remote viewers, were looking into the distance and the future. And while doing that, they are strikingly similar to the detailed instructions given in the Yoga Sutra. Most ancient civilizations appear to have been acquainted with the knowledge of this particular faculty of the human mind. In both the Indian and Chinese scriptures, there are particular instances of the clairvoyant skills of people used as a tool for obtaining relevant military information in the battleground. It is known that the U.S. government's authorities started paying serious attention to investigating the possible applicability of remote viewing techniques for military purposes only when a book titled Psychic Discoveries Behind the Iron Curtain, authored by Sheila Ostrander and Lynn Schroeder, was published in 1970. This book appears to have jolted the U.S. Central Intelligence Agency into action, triggering what one journalist has dubbed as the race for inner space. Hal Puthoff, the founder and first director of the SRI studies, has given a graphic account of how it all began in his recollections of the program. Laboratory investigations of remote viewing. Systematic scientific investigation of telepathy and ESP has been carried out in the U.S. by J.B. Rhine and his associates during the 1930s and the 1940s at Duke's University using a set of 5 Zener cards containing symbols such as a square, circle, star, a plus sign, and a wavy pattern. One of these cards, selected at random, would be kept open in one room, and a transmitting agent would focus his mental attention and concentration on the same. Then you have a receiver, or the viewer, who is sitting in an adjacent room, and they would try to guess which card is open. The success rate in such card guessing tests would be recorded. If the experimental hit rate was statistically more significant than the chance expectation, that rate, which is 1 in 5 or 20%, it would be interpreted as evidence of a telepathic or ESP mode of information transfer. Unfortunately, to obtain statistically significant results, the experiment had to be repeated thousands of times. And this led to a decline in effects due to boredom or tiredness on the part of the remote viewer. To overcome this problem, parapsychology researchers at SRI started using a set of pictures taken from the National Geographic magazine instead of the Zener cards. A rank order method of quantifying the success rate was developed just for this. The focus of the research then shifted to assessing the success rate in a test bed or a field trial, where a remote viewer was asked to sense and describe a natural scene or a military site where an agent or a beacon was then located. Both the transmitting agent at the site and the viewer or receiver sitting in the lab would be asked to fill out an identical 30-point questionnaire with a yes for one or no for zero marking. This method of assessment was first developed by Princeton University researchers in their Engineering Anomalies Research Program while investigating precognitive remote perception, or the investigation into paranormal research. Using advanced mathematical methods developed in the field of artificial intelligence and pattern recognition, the degree of success of the remote viewer was then quantified. In the next stage of research, simulating military spying missions, the presence of the transmitting agent at the target site was dispensed with, and the remote viewer was encouraged to view relevant military targets within the United States, given only the latitude and the longitude of the target site. A brief summary of the outcome of the research on anomalous cognition, which is sponsored by the U.S. government, is still available in Edwin May's website, which is www.lfr.org. Dr. May was the director of this research at the SIAC when the program was officially terminated in 1995. Examples of some testbed trials. During their investigations, the SRI researchers identified at least six star performers with an extraordinary inborn remote viewing talent. While the names of some of them have been revealed, others are only identified by a code number. Those revealed are briefly mentioned below. A. Remote viewing of a high technology site, May 7th, 1987. The viewer, receiver number R372, now known to be Joe McMongle. The primary target site was an electron accelerator at the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory. The cue that was supplied was the name and social security number of an intelligence officer, which was the targeted person, who was unknown to the remote viewer or others stationed at the SRI labs. The assignment was to describe the target person's movements and the ambience of his surroundings at 8-hour intervals during a span of 24 hours. The target person's actual movements, besides moving in the LLNL site, the target person also visited the windmill farm just outside the site premises at 4 p.m. Here are the results. A, quote, fuzzy set analysis of the various descriptions provided by the receiver showed that the overall accuracy of the remote viewing was 77% and overall reliability was 78%. The reliability of the description of the windmill farm was 100%. The accuracy is defined as the percentage of target elements described correctly by the viewer, and reliability as percentage of receiver's response that is correct. Moving on to test bed B, the swimming pool complex at Rincona Park, Palo Alto, 1974. This viewing was carried out by Pat Price, who was described by Russell Targ as one of their psychic treasures. The target was selected randomly from out of a target pool of sites, and it was unknown to Pat Price and Russell Targ who was stationed inside of this Faraday cage in the radio physics building of the SRI International Labs. Hal Putoff and an associate, whose name was Bart, drove off to the target site, which was 5 miles away. After the allotted time of 30 minutes, Pat Price was asked to view and describe the target site. Pat said he saw a circular pool of water about 100 feet in diameter. It was actually 110 feet in diameter. He also saw a rectangular pool 60 feet by 80 feet. The pool actually was 75 feet by 100 feet. He went on to describe a concrete blockhouse, which was also on the site. He drew a diagram of the complex. Pat said that the site seemed to be part of a water purification plant and drew two water storage tanks and some rotating machinery such as pumps, etc. After completing the drawing and description, all of the above drove to the site to assess the accuracy of Pat's viewing. Everything was remarkably accurate except for the two water tanks and the water purification plant, which were absent. Pat Price's inclusion of the non-existent tanks remained a puzzle for 21 years. However, the mystery was unexpectedly solved in March of 1995 when, as part of the centennial celebrations of the city of Palo Alto, a commemorative volume was published. This brochure carried a picture of the Rinconada Park, which was the site in 1913 on the occasion of the inauguration of the city's new waterworks, showing two water tanks exactly at the same location that was indicated by Pat Price in his viewing in 1974. This amazing example brings out one of the remarkable features of remote viewing, namely the ability of the consciousness to assess the past. In remote viewing literature, it is referred to as retrocognition, while in ancient Indian texts, it is described as accessing the Akashic records. Testbed C. Discovery of rings around the planet Jupiter. Ingo Swann, the famous psychic who was in fact responsible for getting Hal Puthoff and his colleagues at the SRI labs interested in investigating the boundary between the animate and the inanimate in 1972, suggested carrying out an experiment to remote view the planet Jupiter before the upcoming NASA Pioneer 10 flyby. Much to the chagrin of Ingo Swann and the SRI researchers, he found a ring around Jupiter and wondered if perhaps he had remote viewed the planet Saturn by mistake. But when the Pioneer 10 flew by, it actually confirmed the existence of rings around Jupiter. Interestingly, a Pune-based medical doctor by the name of Dr. P.V. Vartak has contacted this writer and sent a newspaper clipping describing his astral visits to the Moon, Mars, and Jupiter. Examples of operational assignments. The following are brief summaries of some very interesting operational assignments as reported in the declassified remote viewing literature. A. The radio listening post, Urals, 1974. A receiver volunteered to scan the Soviet Union for a radio listening post and claimed to have found one located at latitude 65 degrees 0 minutes 57 seconds north and longitude 59 degrees 59 minutes 59 seconds east. Note the astonishing precision in pinpointing the geographical coordinates. The receiver then described the detailed geographical features of the surrounding of the site as follows. Elevation, 6,200 feet. Scrubby brush. Tundra-type ground hummocks. Rocky outcroppings. Mountains with fairly steep slopes. Facing north for about 60 miles, ground slopes to marshland. A mountain chain runs off to the right about 35 degrees east of north. Facing south, mountains run north and south. Facing west, mountains drop down to foothills for 60 miles or so, some rivers running roughly north. Facing east, mountains are rather abrupt, dropping to rolling hills and then to flat land. Area site underground, reinforced concrete, doorways of steel of the roll-up type. Unusually high ratio of women to men, at least at night. I see some helipads that are concrete. Light rail tracks run from pads to another set of rails that parallel the doors into the mountain. 30 miles north, 5 degrees west of north, of the site is a radar installation with one large 165-foot dish and 10 small fast-track dishes. The above report was verified by personnel in the sponsor organization as being substantially correct. Testbed B. Nuclear Research Center at Semipalatinsk in the former Soviet Union, July 1974. This was the CIA's very first operational viewing assignment. The viewer was Pat Price. Pat was asked to describe what was located at a suspected underground nuclear testing site in the former Soviet Union, known by the code name PNUTS. The CIA indicated that it was of great interest to them. They had in their possession a spy satellite photograph of the very site. The viewer was given only the geographical coordinates of the site in degrees, minutes, and seconds. This type of viewing has been referred to as coordinate remote viewing. Pat also told that the site was a research and development test facility. The government's representative decided that if the viewer described either the known multi-story crane or odd structures resembling the oil well derricks, then they would continue with the research. Pat's description of this remote site, in his own words, was, quote, "I am lying on my back on the roof of a two- or three-storied brick building. It's a sunny day. The sun feels good. There's this most amazing thing. There is a gigantic crane moving back and forth over my head. As I drift up in the air and look down, it seems to be riding on a track with one rail on each side of the building. I've never seen anything like that." This was the viewing assignment continued for a couple weeks, during which he drew pictures of the gigantic gantry crane and many other items at the site, such as a cluster of compressed gas cylinders, which were also visible in the satellite pictures. The gantry crane was moving on an 8 large wheeled track, two on each of the four legs. This unique feature was confirmed by the satellite photos. The remarkable similarity of his drawing of the crane and the satellite photo can be seen in Ed May's website at www.lfr.org. In later sessions, Pat described the activities in the interior of the building on top of which he was lying under. He explained that people were assembling a giant 60-foot diameter metal sphere using thick metal gores, like sections of an orange peel, but the workmen were having trouble welding it all together as the pieces were warping. They were therefore looking for a lower temperature welding material. SRI researchers were later told that the site was the super secret Soviet atomic bomb laboratory at the Semipalatinsk. They also learned 3 years later from a news item published in Aviation Week magazine that the sphere, which was about 58 feet in diameter, was intended to capture and store energy from a nuclear-driven explosive or a pulse power generator. Russell Targ has commented that the accuracy of Pat Price's drawing is the sort of thing that, as a physicist, I would never have believed if I had not seen it for myself. Testbed C, a spectacular example of precognitive remote viewing, carried out by Joe McMongle in September 1979. Mission. Spy satellite photographs had shown suspicious heavy construction activity around a building located 100 meters from a large body of water somewhere in northern Russia. The National Security Council wanted to know what was going on there. The assignment? Joe was given only the geographical coordinates, the latitude and longitude, and tasked to describe the site. When Joe said it was a cold location near a body of water with large buildings and smokestacks, the NSC was satisfied that he was probably at the right site. They then showed him the satellite photograph in their possession and asked him to find out what was going on inside the building. Joe said the interior is very large and noisy, active working area, full of scaffolding, girders, and blue flashes, probably arc welding. He took a break and continued in another session. Probably a huge submarine under construction. He draws a sketch with dimensions. A long flat deck, strangely angled missile tubes, about 18 to 20 in number. A new type of mechanism to drive the submarine. Maybe nuclear power. A double hull. At this point, the NSC representatives figured that Joe must be wrong because if what he said was true, it would be the world's biggest submarine. No U.S. intelligence agency had ever even heard about it. The U.S. did not possess a submarine this large. Besides, who would build a submarine in a building so far from water? How would they launch it? But since Joe had acquired the reputation of being very accurate, the NSC asked him to view the future and find out when it would be launched. Joe then scanned the future month by month, and he said the Russians would blast a channel to connect the building with the body of water and launch the submarine in 4 months. Confirmation. In January 1980, exactly as predicted by Joe, spy satellite pictures confirmed the launching of the world's biggest submarine after construction of an artificial connecting the building to the water. It had 20 missile tubes, a large flat deck, and it was exactly the way Joe had described it. This example brings out spectacularly the non-local nature of consciousness, not only in space but also in time, even into the future, notes the writer. Testbed D. Location of hostage being held in Lebanon, February 1988. The U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency was asked where Marine Colonel William Higgins was being held as hostage in Lebanon. A viewer said Higgins was in a specific building in a specific South Lebanon village. A released hostage later confirmed that Higgins had probably been in that building at that very time. Another example of precognitive remote viewing, 1989, the Pentagon had asked a viewer about a possible Libyan response to the United States' criticism of a chemical weapons factory at Rabta. The viewer's response was a ship named Patua, or Patua, would arrive in Tripoli to transport chemicals to an eastern Libyan port. Verification. A ship named Batota, in fact, arrived in Tripoli and loaded undetermined amounts of cargo, which was transported to an eastern Libyan port. Implications and conclusions. The intelligence community in the United States clearly seems to value remote viewing data whenever it is available, as a very useful additional input complementing information gathered through various other means and methods. For example, in the present war against terrorism, there is every reason to speculate that the agencies involved in tracking down Osama bin Laden must have sought the help of some other reputed remote viewers for whatever value it may have been. However, the more important implication of the findings of remote viewing research to humanity as a whole, perhaps, is that it serves to validate the age-old concept of many Eastern wisdom traditions that have always emphasized the non-local nature of human consciousness. Thus, it serves to provide some degree of scientific validity to various forms of spiritual and distant healing practices that were emphasized by Russell Targ himself in his 1997 book titled Miracles of the Mind. Another very important aspect emerging from remote viewing research is the question of precognition and its implications. It again seems to give a measure of scientific credence to various stunning but anecdotal stories of premonitions and remarkably successful predictions, such as that of Edgar Cayce. Princeton University's peer group and others have discussed these implications in great depth. Precognition touches some of the very fundamental philosophical questions regarding free will and causality. In view of the importance and implications of the subject of remote viewing to our understanding of consciousness, and considering that remote viewing had already been discussed in considerable depth in our ancient scriptures, it is high time that the subject be taken up for systematic evaluation at some reputed academic institutions here in India. In particular, It would be of great interest to verify if appropriate yogic and meditation or other training practices can help to train subjects in developing remote viewing as claimed by some yoga scholars in India. So this was a thrown together white paper compilation by Dr. M. I'm going to pronounce the guy's name wrong, but Srinivasan, who was formerly the associate director of the physics group of the Bhabda Atomic Research Center in Mumbai, India. He is an experimental physicist who specializes in fast breeder reactor physics and cold fusion. He's since retired, and he has been studying the anomalous phenomena not explained currently by science. His work and the subsequent articles that he was able to obtain from the U.S. government has now funded their research in India into remote viewing and the applications of remote viewing. So one of the things that I would ask you as the listener, what applications, if any, are there for psychic mediums and for those dowsing in the beliefs, customs of Eastern traditions and religions, such as are typically, let's just say, frowned upon within Western society and Christianity? You have to understand that other countries do not have these thresholds where they say it's too far, we can't go that far because God says don't do it. There are other countries out there that do not believe in God, that do not care about Jesus Christ, that do not care about your Christian values or religion, and will dwell as deep as the well will go to find hidden information. And somewhere lurking in those dark waters, there's always a helping hand. There's always an entity that is willing and waiting for you to come by and to ask questions of the mind, questions of the future, and is always willing to give it at a price. This, I believe, is one of the main reasons why I think it's so important for listeners to understand that paranormal research, parapsychology, psychokinesis, these things that I've been reading to you, government white papers, things that are now disclosed, classified projects, experiments, and operations that our various agencies within the United States government were a part of and are still a part of. Originally, this came from Nazi Germany. However, this is something that Nazi Germany, through the Annenerbe, were then going out into the Eastern religions. They were going out into certain areas of Asia and India. They were going out into other places within Africa. And they were searching for these hidden powers and abilities for their wonder weapon classified research. You know, part of the wonder weapon research was the ability to create the America Bomber Project. And I've spoken in great depth about the America Bomber Project and why I think Wernher von Braun is probably one of the most evil men to have ever walked this earth. However, that is only one slice of the pie. That is only the material side. They also, the Nazis, also went to the very far extreme left, and they wanted to go into the supernatural. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is what they were after. They were after the ability to control the mind, control the space around you without ever using any of your sensory methods. You know, no touch, no taste, no smell, no sight, no hearing, just to be able to meditate and then to move objects or to fly through the air and use your, I guess, spirit form, or however it is that they want to call themselves, to go and spy on other countries and other people. This is what you call witchcraft. This is something that is very much happening within commonplace America. Witchcraft has become one of the fastest growing religions in America. And now it is an accepted form of religion within the United States military. So, do you not think they're recruiting people who practice in the arts of the dark side of magic? Which obviously, you have to understand there's two forms of magic. There's street magic, which is fun for the kids and at comedy shows. And then there is the magic where you are shaking hands with the devil for certain capabilities. People within our government will do whatever there is to have a tactical advantage over you, over the future, over their enemies, maybe even over God. Of course, we know already, as bought and born again believers, we don't dwell in that. We don't involve ourselves in that. And I will say, if you are out there and you're listening to me and you are playing with Ouija boards, if you are trying to summon your long-lost loved ones, you better stop. Because when you open those gateways, those doorways, they don't close. There are some things that we, I think, as humans should just not dabble in. But obviously, we as humans are going to dabble into everything possible, especially when we're told not to do it. I think that the research that the CIA and the Defense Intelligence did was very valid research. I'm a man of science, so I like to see whenever the application of a scientific method is actually being researched and conditioned, and then it's tested and, you know, even disproved to certain extents. I do admire that. However, you know, it just makes me think, when all these people from the CIA and the Department of Defense and various agencies were doing this, was there ever a Christian man around saying, hey, we probably shouldn't be doing this? And if so, was he ever listened to? Obviously not. Think about that today with today's government. We have probably one of the most reprobate governments ever in the United States history. What do you think they're dabbling into? They openly want to destroy men and women. They openly want to destroy children in various ways, including sexually, or exploit them. They're doing their best to kill the economy. I haven't spoken about politics and the economy and all that in a couple days. So, you know, here's your little update. They're destroying the economy. Get ready for that. But with all this being said, very little of the application of the redeeming blood of Christ is being applied by our government, if not zero of it. And so if they're not going to be practicing Christians, then you better expect them to be practicing pagans. These people, I don't know what it is about it, but, you know, they just hired a Satanist, a guy who's a homosexual, openly satanic. You know, that's a guy who's going to be walking around the halls of the White House. This is the new age. This is the age that we have been foretold was going to be coming, and all the many, many calamities that were going to be coming with it. But once again, as I always like to prove, history is always in the making. And if you go back in history and you do your actual research, you will find quite a bit of chicanery that the U.S. government has always been involved in. We are never above the ability to go to whatever extreme there is in order to get that tactical advantage, right? You know, I know that a lot of people look at the sorcery and witchcraft and magic and all that type of stuff as, you know, make-believe fairy tale stuff. Well, it wasn't to the CIA. It wasn't to the Defense Intelligence Agency. It wasn't to the Naval Research Group. It wasn't to DARPA. It wasn't to the army. So, you know, and if our own enemies, the Russians at that point in time, were dabbling in the exact same thing, what the real question beckons within me is, just what in the hell were the Nazis into? Because after the capture of the Nazi scientists, post the paperclip project, that is when the explosion into the esoteric and all these very strange projects and operations within the CIA and the rest of the agencies I've already mentioned started here in the United States. Also, our experimentation into rocketry that would send people to the moon or that would create the first intercontinental ballistic missile. You know, all that happened because of the Nazis. And that was the technical side. But very, very little is really known about the occultic side. And I've gone into great detail into the occultic side. If you actually go back into some of the earlier episodes, I believe it's like in the 30s episodes, where I did a 8-part series over Nazi Germany. There is an entire series in there about the Nazi occultism. Now, once again, they are not the ones who created this. They just learned to harness whatever this power was, and they used it. That's how they were able to capitulate an entire nation of people to commit human atrocities to a scale that is an industrial scale of mass murder. We started an entire war over this. The entire World War II was carried out because of these people's delving into the occult, which led them into supremacy ideologies, their white supremacy ideologies. And it wasn't, and you know, this is something where people normally get this wrong. It's not white supremacy. Do your research. It was Aryan supremacy. If you were of proper Aryan blood, all right, and they actually had blood tests and, you know, tests for the skull and the eyes and all this type of stuff. But they even said that the ancient people of the Himalayans were the original Aryans. So, you know, the research really got kind of parabolic at some point, but I will say this, that they devoted so much time into the occultism that if they would have at least paid more attention to the physics and the scientific application of warfare and the atom bomb and creating the heavy water for the atom bomb, America may be speaking German right now. That's how close we were to really losing that war. Of course, Germany was controlled by a madman who was more or less completely encapsulated by occultism, right? Same scenario happening in the United States today. It's just a different type of occultism. It's just a different type of paranormal research. It's just a different type of focus groups. But it's all the same end goal. And I believe, honestly, the dangers of Joe Biden and the dangers of a lot of these other places is that, honestly, we could go down the wrong path very quickly and end up just like Nazi Germany. So that's your lesson for the day. Do your research, train, prep, and pray, and stay frosty. The enemy is out there.
All stations, all call signs. Prepare for transmission. This is Wrecker Actual. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves, but rather give place unto wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine. I will repay, saith the Lord. End of transmission.